Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I am your host, Lisa Zimmer, and I'm very pleased to have our guest today. He's a brilliant man who has wrote an incredible book, Philip Shepherd, who has written New Self, New World. And we're going to talk to Philip a little bit today because his book is so packed with information that I was just talking to him before we went live on. Every time I pick it up, there's always something new that I get from it. And it's one of those books that you use kind of as a reference book, or kind of needing to tap in if you're feeling a little out of sorts and you need, because he has information and wisdom and brilliance, and then he includes these incredible tools and skills that you can really utilize and simplify your life and really moving through your stuff to really become more authentic and really tapped into your inner self. So without further ado, let me introduce and welcome my guest, Philip Shepherd. Philip, thank you so much for being with us today. Welcome.
It's a complete pleasure to be here with you, Lisa. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I'm really excited to provide our listeners today with some of your wisdom, certainly not all of your wisdom, but some of your wisdom today. And your book, New Self, New World, we're talking a lot about today how to kind of shift through our old paradigms. And let's first, because you've been on before, and when you were on the show before, we got into a lot of the dynamics of the book. And today I'd like to take a different approach and get into more of your actual exercises and tools to give our audience some real basic, tangible ways to create a shift physically, emotionally, mentally. And so let's just refresh a little bit about what inspired you with this book. You went on a physical journey that really, really helped create this whole wonderful journey and path you're on with everything you're doing, because you do workshops and you wrote the book and you're really, shifting people daily. So let's start with a little bit of how you were inspired to create this.
Well, my inspiration kind of goes back to, it was seeded by frustration, I think, because I, growing up as a teenager, I really felt confined by the unseen strictures of my culture. What I mean by that is I could feel my thinking kind of being shepherded into these well-worn grooves, and I knew that I couldn't resist that pull from inside the culture, that I had to get out of it. So I went on a journey, quite literally. I went to England and bought a bicycle and cycled through Europe, the Middle East, and India on my way to Japan. And one of the main reasons I was heading for Japan is because they have a form of classical theater called No Theater. And I'd seen a production of that when I was 17, and it had so baffled me and so shaken me to the core and moved me, and I had no idea how they had achieved that effect, and I really yearned to watch it and study it until that became clear. And one of the seeds that I was missing from my culture was the Japanese concept of hara, and hara just means belly, but for the Japanese, the belly is so much more than where it is for us. The belly is the seat of your deepest truths and your most unique expression of yourself. And so that began a long journey that took me out of my head and into my body in a whole new way.
And in taking you out of your head and into your body, did you feel, how did that resonate to you? Did you see, feel, act differently? Was there more compassion? Did you feel more empathetic? Did you notice subtle changes, or was it like kind of more of a burst?
Well, it was a gradual shift, because it's funny, you look at our entire culture, and we say, sort of tacitly, we don't say it explicitly, but we tacitly say up is good and down is bad. Mm-hmm. And that shows, you know, I'm feeling up today, oh, he's down in the dumps, you know, for all mm-hmm. whole host of expressions like that. The market's up, the market's down, to heaven is up, hell is down. And even our planet, you know, because the Europeans, by and large, gave us our conception of the globe, the North Pole, of course, is up, and the South Pole is down. And mm-hmm. all of that up-down value system that lives through our culture. I mean, you move to a condominium. Where would you love to live in it? The penthouse. And the penthouse is, right, it's up on top. It's kind of at a distance from everything and can't be affected by it. But you can look down and sort of notice it, but you're kind of immune. And right. and that's the paradigm that... It's not that it governs how we live in our bodies. It's how we live in our bodies creates that paradigm. And so to shift that around and say, well, you know what, down is good, is a whole different thing. And so it took me a long time. And boy, the changes. I mean, they're subtle. They're major. They're one of the major kind of transformations for me. Was that I discovered that down in the body, what I mean by that is when I actually come to rest on the pelvic floor, that's home.
Mm-hmm.
That's the center of being. And so to come down to that place in the body is literally to come home to the present. And, you know, all my readings, all my study... brought a whole range of different fields into perspective. It's like if you lay sheets on an overhead projector, transparencies one on top of another, they all align to tell the same story. And one of those stories is that our culture, European culture, I mean by that, used to live and experience our center in the belly. And you can see that rise over history. So by the time the Greeks come along, our consciousness is centered in the chest, and then by this is in Homer's day, which is 800 BC, and then by 450 BC or so, we're in our heads. Mm-hmm. And that another transparency is our shift away from the goddess to the gods, which follows, you know, on the same timeline, that shift in the body up into the head.
Right.
And it turns out living in the head is something that marries us to male values.
Ah.
Even to the point where our word capitalism comes from a Latin word that means head.
Ah.
And you can see, yeah, right, capitalism gratifies male values of acquisition and power and you know, all those things that tend to... tend to draw the male aspect of our consciousness, which is really distinct from the nurturing aspect of our consciousness that aligns with the female. So that journey in my own body down to come to rest on the pelvic floor was one that brought me into a place of rest, a place of compassion, a place of ease. But even more than that, it brings me into coherence.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a concept I've been thinking a lot about. There's a physicist in the States, John Hagelin, quantum physicist, great guy, and he's talked about this universal principle in nature whereby if a system is internally coherent, it has the ability to repel external influences that are disruptive. Now, this guy, he's got a great video on YouTube. John Hagelin, his name is, if people want to look it up, H-A-G-E-L-I.
Okay.
that looks at this study that was done in the Middle East, in a war zone, and they had people meditating over a period of time, and sometimes there were a lot of people meditating, and sometimes just a few, you know, it was sort of an open thing, but, you know, up to 1,000 people meditating, and they tracked the number of meditators against the incidences of violence in that area, and they almost track in tandem. It's extraordinary.
Wow. Wow, that's an amazing thing.
It's phenomenal, and this thing, the journal in which he these findings were to be published, took 2 years before they felt comfortable publishing them, but they said this, the quality of the science is absolutely beyond dispute, so they published it and invited other researchers to try to duplicate the effect, and it was duplicated every single time.
Really?
Yeah. Extraordinary. Just extraordinary.
That is extraordinary. And you have that as, you know, you're talking a lot about the pelvic floor exercise. I was going to start off with, you know, listening to the beat, you know, as a grounding, but do you feel that the pelvic floor exercise is probably the most effective in grounding and aligning one to themselves as a basic exercise, as like the premise of kind of like moving through or connecting?
I've got a very personal take on this, because listening to the beat is an exercise that brings us to the heart and just to the sensitivity of it.
Right.
And a lot of our culture talks about the importance of getting back in touch with the heart and how heart-centered action is so important, none of which I dispute. But
mm-hmm.
the heart is supported by our being. Now, in my study, I've come to understand that the head and the cranium is where we can consciously think. The pelvic bowl is where we can consciously be.
Ah.
Now, if you're trying to act from the heart without that rooted connection in being, you're going to get into trouble. You're going to be off balance. You're going to be giving and vulnerable and hurt. You're going to be, your energy is going to be depleted. Yes, the heart is important, but as you say, that rootedness in our own being in the pelvic floor, to me, is what our culture most desperately needs
mm-hmm.
in order to come back into that coherence and balance, you know, not just within ourselves, but with the entire world around us. In fact, when I talk about being, it's a kind of obscure idea, except I think of it very specifically. Your being is what you discover when you're fully present.
Mm-hmm.
Your being's not independent of the world around you.
Right.
In fact, your being is created in a real sense by the world around you, because you take that world away and you disappear. Even in those experiments they do in the isolation chambers where someone, you know, there's nothing to see, there's nothing to hear, all the senses are deprived, the world around sort of disappears. People just go stark raving mad very quickly. It's the world around us that holds our being. So to come back to the pelvic floor is really, for me, to come back to the present.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Now,
yeah.
Can we get into the physical dynamics of telling our audience or giving them some pointers on how to do the pelvic
bowl? Yeah, well, one of the difficulties we face is we've deprived that whole area of consciousness, in effect. We've withdrawn our sensitivity out of the body and up into the head. So I talk about the pelvic floor and the pelvic bowl, and people say, well, where is that? How do I feel that? What does it look like? Well, what it looks like is pretty interesting if you look to the Mayan tradition, because the Mayan tradition understood that a human being has two skulls. There's the cranium and there's the pelvic bowl. And if you look at a skeleton, the bones that constitute the pelvic bowl really look bowl-like. And so the Mayans, it's sort of understood we have these two centers, and between them the currents of our life run. So to understand the pelvic bowl in that literal sense of the bowl that is formed by the bones of the pelvis, at least you've got a sense of the shape and where it is. Now, to feel it, there are a couple of things I'd invite people to do. One is if your feet are flat on the floor and maybe shoulder width apart or a little wider, and you just drop the tailbone. So you're actually dropping the whole body down to the floor into a squat position. And the reason I suggest that is because in that squat position, suddenly the pelvic floor opens up and you can feel your breath. You can actually feel the pelvic floor move with your breath. It's almost like an accordion in that position. And then the other thing, too, is when you stand back up again from that squatting position, you can bring yourself up, kind of lift yourself up from the pelvic floor. And it's so easy. We return to the floor with such reluctance. And other cultures go to the floor, like the Japanese culture goes to the floor to eat, they go to the floor to sleep, they go to the floor to sit. Right? You watch someone, if they're trying to pick up something off the floor, there is resistance in their body right away, and they go only as far as they need to as they bend over, and then they quickly come right back up again.
Right.
If you can go to the floor with a sense of coming home, it completely changes that. And then you'll find that if you do go into that flat-footed squat, if you pay attention, the likelihood is that you're not completely giving yourself over to the floor. You're still, in a way, holding yourself up, and then to allow your weight to fully drop down in your body. It's just a lovely thing. And then again, pick yourself up, lift yourself up from the pelvic floor, and it's so easy. And then so that gives you a sense of the life of the pelvic floor and the way it breathes and responds and opens.
And in doing that, would you say that we become more aware and in tune to possibly our solar plexus and our feeling center, and more conscious of how our body responds to our thoughts and to external stimuli and situations like that? Because the pelvic floor exercise for me really helped ground me, and it really helped bring an alignment from my head down into my body. And so for me, physically and personally, I felt that shift from, active thought to really assimilating the thought process into the body, where it was, kind of like eased anxiety or grounded me to feel more fully, conscious and aware, both within the body and in the mind. And do you feel like that one is really where we as, especially, within the modern world of distractions, where we need to kind of begin? Even though the heart is very important, we all need to, remain open, and, we understand that concept, and we'll get into the listen to the beat as well. But, really starting with the pelvic floor exercise, that's, you know, like you were saying, the Asian culture, they don't look at the ground and the grounding as a negative. They look at it as that's part of their culture, that's part of what's honored.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I do all that you're talking about, I totally find. In fact, when you think about it, the head, the virtue or the strength of the head is its ability to analyze. And the word analysis literally means to pull to pieces. And we're always pulling our word to pieces and juggling those pieces around and reassembling them. And to come back to the pelvic floor is to come back to a place of wholeness within the body. That's why I think of it as coming home. You're coming home to the present. You're coming home to the body. And in that place of rest and ease, there is an alignment, just as you talk about, that once you return to your core, once you return to your center, then everything can come into relationship with that center. And for me, that center is in the pelvic bowl. If we're up in the body or up in the head, we're off center, and we feel our lives feel chaotic and imbalanced and out of control and off center.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And is that where you begin in your workshops? Do you begin with the pelvic bowl as an exercise with your students?
The workshop, where I begin in the workshop, is a series of exercises that shows people that they are instinctively choosing to go up in their bodies, and there's actually an alternative, which is to go down, that will serve them much better. For example, there's a simple exercise where I just put people into partners and have one partner gently push another partner on their shoulders. And, of course, they take a couple of steps back or they go off balance. And the reason they go off balance like that is because their weight is up high in the body. They're anticipating. It's, you know, when we get frightened, oh, we go, you know, shoulders go up, we go up in the body. When we get excited, we go up in the body. And you look at a cat. A cat gets startled and it goes whoom down to the floor in readiness. A tennis player. You look at a tennis player waiting for a serve, and the moment the ball is hit from the other side of the court, their weight drops into the court. And when life comes along and gives us a shove or pushes us around, that's the same thing. Our weight tends to go up. My gosh, what a difference when you allow the weight to drop down into the pelvic bowl. And then someone literally can come along and push you, and you don't budge. And it's not that you're using muscle. It really isn't. It's not that you're bracing yourself against it. You're just centered. You are, you know, to go back to John Hagelin, you are a coherent system. And this disruption, this external disruption, is unable to upset that when you come into coherence. It's like the athlete in the zone. It's exactly the same thing. The athlete in the zone is in a place of coherence that is in seamless unity with the world around them. So every detail of the world is seen and understood in coherence and is a source of guidance to them in everything they do.
And, you know, I really love, this is, you know, testament to how incredible your work and your book and your workshops and everything are. You're such an incredible observer of life, and you take these observations and you really use it as such powerful, you know, metaphors and ways to really teach the listener or the student, you know, practicality and practical ways of really just utilizing what they already have, what God's already given them, and to utilize it to the most fully able capacity of themselves. You've got this, I mean, it's your book is really, like I have said, It's one of those books you really can't read once and put down. It's really one of those books that you refer to. I find myself referring to it. And one of my favorite exercises, like I was telling you before we went on, was the elevator shaft. And I find that one really effective because I've used it, you know, periodically when I've needed to, and I can draw on it very easily. And let's talk a little bit about how that one is used and what that one's utilized for to open up in people. Where do we use that in kind of like becoming more aware?
The context for the elevator exercise is really the evolution of our consciousness over 10,000 years, which literally, as I said, has moved from the pelvic bowl in Indo-European times, like 10,000 years ago, and it's shifted the center of our consciousness as we've evolved towards the male aspect of our consciousness. It's moved up through the body, and you can trace it through language and our use of words until it arrives in the head. So the elevator exercise reverses 10,000 years of
wow.
evolutionary history. And it's so simple. And I'd be happy to talk listeners through it if you think they'd enjoy that.
I think it's a powerful one for me. I thoroughly support, you know, that one. So let's get into that. Certainly.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Then here's the elevator shaft. If you're standing with your knees soft, and the reason I say knees soft is because we tend to lock our knees, and then that locks our hips and stresses our back, and the breath can't flow. So if you soften your knees, suddenly you can feel your weight on the floor beneath you. And then let the breath drop in. And if you can let the breath drop into the pelvic bowl, that's just lovely. And you do that not by pushing it down to the pelvic bowl, but you sort of allow the pelvic bowl to open in the same way that a smile opens your heart. The pelvic bowl opens and receives the breath, and the breath releases out again. And then imagine a shaft running down through the body from the top of your head all the way down to the pelvic floor. And it sort of sits in front of the spine, but takes the spine in. And that shaft running down through your body is what we call the elevator shaft. And then you feel the elevator, and the elevator is the center of your awareness, the center of your consciousness, the center of your thinking. And you feel that at the top of the elevator shaft in your head. And you can actually shift it around quite easily within the head. You can move it forward a bit. You can move it back, side to side. And then allow that elevator to begin its descent down through that shaft. And it drops down through the body almost the way an olive pit might drop through olive oil. And if there's a little place in the body where it stalls out, where you can't feel it descend, it sort of gets stuck, what you've found is a little gift of insight, because that's a little shadow in the body, a little block. If you can bring your love to that, your love and acceptance, that shadow will begin to melt and return back to the whole. And then the elevator can begin its descent again and drop down, down through the body until it literally comes to rest on the pelvic floor. And I find for myself, it's the last inch and a half of the descent that you know, I think I'm there, and then, ah, no, I wasn't. There it is. And sometimes what I do then is I let that elevator drop down slightly below the pelvic floor and come back up to rest on it. And then I know I'm truly there.
Mm.
And that dropping down to the pelvic floor in that way returns you to your center, to yourself, to your body, to this moment in time. And that alignment that you talk about, the sense of coherence and balance, these things come as you become more and more familiar with that terrain of self and your consciousness. And as I think of it, what you're doing is you're dropping into the female aspect of your consciousness. It's interesting because the Tao Te Ching has this little line, know the male, but keep to the female.
Mm.
And our being, that center of our being, which is the female pole of our consciousness, is home. And we, when we live in our heads, we are like an astronaut in orbit, zipping around the earth, you know, seeing all kinds of things, but never, never coming home to integrate what we found out. And that's the place of integration, really, in the pelvic bowl.
And so necessary. I mean, it's, you know, we talk, we hear so much in regard to self-growth and self-change and, you know, how, you know, it is a instant fast food world. And unfortunately, people tend to want things to create change in a fast-paced movement. And the part that I really love about your work is that it is very conscious, and it's conscious in the realm of really taking time with each movement, almost like, you know, yoga is. It's a connection of the body, mind, spirit. Your work is also that integration of the body, mind, spirit, where all senses are in sync, and just by the mere fact of doing this consciously, it's already opening up that awareness and tweaking it just a little bit, even if you don't even realize the residual effect that it's going to have later down the road in doing the exercises. You were talking a little bit before we went live in regard to your workshops and how you have more therapists who are just really amazed and getting so much from your work. I imagine that that's really going to turn therapy on a whole new level, which I find really groundbreaking and really phenomenal, because it's something that, you know, it takes therapy out of the brain, out of the left side, and really integrates both the left and the right brain in such a way that, you know, it makes it more of an impact and more, you know, integrated. Now, my long-winded but let's get into a little bit of your, you know, your talk about the second stomach or the second brain, the second brain in regard to the enteric nervous system. And you get a little bit in regard the endocrine and the endocrine and the immune and the genetic networks and the psychological. How can we simplify that for our listeners? How can we get to a point where they can understand what their second brain is and how to utilize that? Is there an exercise, or is there an awareness, or is there something you can offer them?
I mean, we can certainly start with a simplification of all those aspects of it. We have for millennia experienced our consciousness as unipolar. We've experienced it as either consciousness in the pelvic bowl in the Paleolithic and early Neolithic era, or in the chest or in the head. My understanding is that our consciousness is axial. What I mean by that is it's an axis that runs between the brain in the head and the brain in the belly. The brain in the head is the male pole of our consciousness. The brain in the belly is the female pole of our consciousness. Now, when I say the brain in the belly, just to be clear, I'm not being metaphoric. We've known for over 100 years that there's a brain in the belly, but we have devised a story about what it means to be human that leaves no room for that knowledge. And so that knowledge has been forgotten and rediscovered and forgotten and rediscovered and finally, for the third time, rediscovered in the 1960s by Michael Gerson, who wrote a book called The Second Brain in the 1980s. And yet, if you go to someone on the street and you say, excuse me, how many brains do you have? He'll look at you like you're a nutcase, right? Because we can't accommodate that. Now, if you'd go to someone and say, can you tell me about right brain, left brain differences, the likelihood is that they'll be able to clarify
right.
What the differences are, because right brain, left brain keeps us in the head, which is where we're comfortable. So the second brain is what I call home. It's the female pole of our consciousness. And the two, we need both. It's not that we should chuck, you know, our analytic faculties or our systematization, but our culture and by default our very lives are devoted to gathering perspectives. And that's the strength of the male aspect of our consciousness. When you're in your head, you create the subject-object duality. You cannot be in your head and be in a state of unification. You're separate from the world, and so you see objects around you which are more than likely dead because you can't feel them, or they're perceived to be dead because you can't feel them. And we gather perspectives. We try to get the answers to fix our lives, the perspectives that will enable us to make more money, the insights that will help us be better parents. All of these things are valuable. But we've got this belief that if we gather enough perspectives, we'll have the whole answer and we'll win. What we don't seem to realize, is that until a perspective has been integrated, it will deaden us. We have all these ideas that stand between us and our own lives, and we hold on to those. We're mediating our entire experience of breath and life and relationship through these rules and shoulds and how-tos that we incorporate. Now, if the elevator exercise, which takes us from that terrain of perspective into the terrain of integration, you can do the elevator exercise with an idea. You can do it with the center of your consciousness, but you can also take an idea like fire is hot, or the flower is pink, or any idea. And if you allow that idea to travel down through that shaft in the body, that central corridor, and come to rest on the pelvic floor, any time I've asked someone to do that and they've done it successfully, the idea converts into sensation. So in the same way that an astronaut in orbit around Mother Earth can take a picture of the Earth and bring it back to us and say, look, here's what I saw. And that photograph became the most frequently duplicated photograph in the 20th century because it sensitized us to the very ground we live in and the air we breathe, because suddenly we were aware of ourselves as this miraculous pastel orb in the infinity of space. Any perspective that you gain that is brought back to Mother Earth, that is brought back to the pelvic bowl, will sensitize us to the world. And one of the gravest injustices that we've perpetrated on ourselves is this idea that intelligence is our facility for abstract reasoning. It's such a narrow, narrow part of our intelligence. And once you recognize that intelligence is actually sensitivity, that your sensitivity to a child's moods or your sensitivity to a breeze or to the pulse of energy in the forest, to melody, it doesn't matter. Your sensitivity to all of these things are expressions of your intelligence, just as a sensitivity to arithmetic relationship is a form of your intelligence. But once you understand intelligence to be sensitivity, then you begin to appreciate the virtue of that journey down into the pelvic bowl that can take any perspective and allow it to sensitize you anew to the world around you. It converts into sensation. And there's one more step beyond that, which is that as you integrate, and all those perspectives become sensation, eventually the sensations birth an insight. So then sensation converts into idea or insight, whether it's E equals MC squared or my gosh, I'm in the wrong career, whatever it is.
Right, right. And you know, you're talking about how we need to, you know, honor the feminine. And of course the feminine comes in with that sensitivity that you were just talking about. Do you find that as you're teaching and you're working with groups of people, are there specific blocks that you find overall, generally speaking, that men have to move through in regard to trusting that sensitivity within themselves? Because for women, you know, it's as a culture, you always hear, you know, female intuition and women's intuition, and so we're kind of encouraged to utilize that aspect, and it's accepted more. But when you start working with the male essence, do you find overall there's a general aspect within the men, or some men, that they have to move through, or that they come up against in regard to having to shift?
It's a really interesting question, and here's what I found in my understanding of any kind of therapy, any modality. In my understanding, is working towards a fully liberated body. Whether it's talk therapy or Feldenkrais or NLP, whatever it is, if the psyche is liberated, that is made possible by or makes possible a fully liberated body. So in my workshop, I'm using exercises to disclose divisions that we've embodied within ourselves. And what I've found is that women have as many of those as men. Now, part of that is a result of the fact that the men who come to my workshop are obviously not run-of-the-mill. Like, there are usually fewer, not always, but usually fewer men coming to the workshop, and they're men who are genuinely asking questions. They're not part of the entitled and self-satisfied elite or whatever it may be. But You appreciate, you know, in the exercises, the number of times these women have been told, your opinion doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts aren't worth expressing. Your voice is weak. And my gosh, how to live with that messaging over and over as a child growing up and as a young adult without, you know, giving into it in a way, or how to climb out of it in adulthood. It's a huge thing. So the breakthroughs in the women that I teach are every bit as dramatic as the breakthroughs in the men.
Okay.
There are often differences. I had a guy at my last workshop who was there because his wife had said, "You're coming," and he, you could tell that he was not in his comfort zone.
Right.
But he hung in there and exercises. He's a burly guy. Exercises that you would think would have been somewhat easier for him worked, like the exercise I talked about where you push on the shoulders. He didn't know how to drop down in his body. So suddenly he could feel it, and he's confused by it, but he was dealing with it. So I think what he got from the workshop was huge. But I think there probably are slightly different issues that men and women tend to bring to it.
And, there's this piece that is opening up. As you said, there's, majority of females in your workshops, but there is this piece where, women are tugging, pulling, yanking, pushing their men into personal growth and, emotional development. And, it's more of getting outside of themselves because society really doesn't support men, especially when they're in a corporate structure or they're in a male-dominated profession or business, that they ever really use that feminine aspect or give it credit in their day. That if they're more creative-based, they will. But if they're, analytical left brain, they're doing it more on a conscious level, not on an unconscious level. So I imagine that in dealing with these men in your workshop, that they are opening up a side of themselves and they really have these effects that linger or these benefits that linger far after the workshop has ended. And then as well as the women where they've been stifled or they've been repressed or they felt like they couldn't voice their opinion. And here they're being honored and they're being nurtured to come out of themselves and to fully embrace their truth and their openness and their heart. So there's a lot of subtleties that happen behind the scenes with these exercises, I find, both personally and in listening to you talk about how you work. That I'm assuming that there's a lot of, growth even after they leave your workshop. Do you get follow-ups? Do you get a lot of emails and letters and hey, I just want to share this?
I do, and it's absolutely so gratifying, and it's what keeps me going because, I wouldn't do it. I've taken workshops that, the Sunday the workshop finishes and you feel great, and then by Tuesday it's as if you've never taken it. If there weren't that effect from my workshop that really radically redefines up and down and really radically redefines the relationship between idea and energy. In our culture there is such a divide between idea and energy, and we give our whole allegiance to idea, and the energy of our body and the energy of the moment is sacrificed over and over, and that's what the exercises sort of manipulate people into a place where they can feel the energy vividly in their body, and they can also feel how divided they are from it.
Right.
And then they learn what it is to drop into it and to feel that power from their core. And it's just, it's just fabulous. I just love it.
And you're doing empowering, incredible work. And, it's the fact that you're getting professionals and therapists to be open to receiving your message and your wisdom, I find that really encouraging. I find it encouraging not only on a personal level but on a global level because we're not stuck in this this old school way of doing therapy. There are brilliant minds out there receiving brilliant information, and you know, you're an incredible facilitator in this, so kudos.
Oh, thank you. There's this principle that runs through the whole book, which is as we relate to the body, so we relate to the world. And we see the broken world around us. We see all these things going wrong, and we cook up more and more ideas about how to fix our lives and how to fix the environment and how to fix the capitalist system we live in. And to me, it's all an expression of how we live in the body. And mm-hmm. a lot of those efforts to fix our lives, it's if it's all about the body, if in fact the way we relate to the world is the way we relate to the body, then why not come home to the body and see if we can bring the body into coherence and balance, to see if we can center it in the present. And then there's the opportunity to find guidance in the present. We are taught to guide ourselves, to have the ideas that will shape the agendas, that will tell us what to do at every minute. And we're always referring back to our ideas to know what to do next. And it's such
right.
a different thing to drop into the energy of the present and feel its deep harmony and the deep rest that supports it all, and to be guided by that.
And trusting it, because we all have this innately aware wisdom within. It's just that, you know, society really doesn't encourage us to trust within ourselves. And so you find so many people seeking things outside of themselves, good and bad, and getting confused in the process. So another reason why your work is so powerful, because it gives the power back to the individual. It doesn't say, hey, go here and go to this person, or, you know, spend this money on these tools. You know, your tools are all encompassed within the body, within the physical form, so there's nothing you need to buy except your book. Again, that's new self, new world, Philip Shepherd. But you know, there's that incredible self-empowerment that you provide for those that you are guiding, both in the book and in your workshops. We have about 7 minutes left in the show, and I really want to provide our listeners with as much information for themselves to empower themselves. So is there something we can share in our last 7 minutes here that you feel really would benefit our listeners to kind of like, you know, we got into the pelvic bowl, we got into the elevator shaft. Is there something you can provide our listeners that would really help, you know, boost them to kind of take that leap, that step, that jump?
The big context in all you're talking about, the big context for me is where we fit in the polarity between doing and being. We you know, the courses that say buy this and do this and all that stuff are what they're communicating is all you need to do is this or do that and your life will be better. Do this one thing or do these three things and your life will be better. But the emphasis is on an idea that is the male aspect of our consciousness that is going to save us. And largely what my book is about is to come back to being. And
mm-hmm.
that's what that means to be at rest in the pelvic floor. And when you're truly centered in your own being, there is no doubt. You don't have feelings of anxiety and loss. You've come home. And the doing then arises out of the being and is empowered by it. So if you separate from that whole consciousness in the belly and do according to an idea, your doing is not fed or nourished by being. If you come back to being, if you come to rest in the pelvic bowl, and it literally when I say come to rest there, I mean every little shred of anticipation in your body. And anticipation is always an expression of the male element of consciousness. It's what should we do? How should we do it? What? Every little bit of anticipation falls away as you drop down into the pelvic bowl. And when you really come to rest there, you are anticipating nothing. And when you are anticipating nothing, you are fully at rest in the moment. And you're fully at rest in your own being. And then you can
Wonderful.
Feel all the world supporting you.
Mm. That's a wonderful place to be. That is a wonderful place to be. And it is. It is coming out of, you know, our head and into our feeling sense center. And also in doing that, it does simultaneously, in fact, doesn't it open up our heart center to become more receptive?
It's like the we are so far gone that we think the important thing is to listen to the body. And if you're talking to somebody who's listening to the body, you're saying, listen, the body's in one room, you're in the room next door, and you should put your ear to the wall and see what's happening there. It's a deeply, deeply flawed paradigm. You don't listen to the body, you drop into the body and inhabit it, and through the body you listen to the world.
And good point.
We've so cut off from the world around us.
Right. Right, and it's very easy to be cut off because there's so many distractions. And is in part of this work, did you find that your resonance with nature was really an impetus also to kind of allowing and being? Because, you know, nature is very nurturing and alive, and yet at the same point so are we, but we create that disconnect through, you know, all these distractions. So,
In the last workshop, one of the women said, you know, I love trees, but I was looking at the tree the other day, and I thought, my gosh, it's so beautiful. And as soon as I said that, I could feel how separate I was from the tree. And nature is our most intimate teacher, but I suggested to her, you know, maybe try this. Maybe look at the tree and say, we are so beautiful. And that's the place we need to get to in the world.
Yes, yes. That's a beautiful statement right there, because it is. It's if you can look at nature and see, you know, God's beauty, that's your link right there to divinity. And
the tree and you are born of the same star matter. The tree's ancestors breathed oxygen into the air that your ancestors thrived on. You can't separate the two. The tree exists because I exist, and we are both expressions of this amazing spirit of life that sustains everything.
And that is... That's where we all need to be. That's where we need to remember and be mindful when we get distracted and anxiety-ridden, that we have the tools within ourselves to really bring that calming, that grounding, that peace, that beauty of where we want to be within ourselves. And Philip, we have 1 minute left, and this has been like a really fast hour. Thank you so much.
It's galloped by. Can I say one other little thing?
Please do.
Is that our whole culture is foreground obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in your head, everything is separate and things shift in and out of your foreground. This is your foreground, now this is. And we miss the background. And when you drop into the pelvic bowl, you suddenly belong to the trees and the grass and the sky. And the background lives, and the foreground almost disappears.
Oh, that's a great statement to wrap up the show. Thank you for that. Philip Shepherd, thank you. so much for being on Unlimited Realities. New Self, New World is the book. I really hope you all buy it because it's something that you're really going to get a lot out of for many, many, many years in regard to going back and using it as a reference for yourself. And thank you again, Philip, for being on today. It's been a true joy. This has been a really quick hour. So good luck in all your work, your workshops, and all you have going on. And I look forward to connecting again.
I'd absolutely love to. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you, Philip. Have a beautiful day. And thank you, everyone, for listening. God bless, and we'll tune in next week. Thank you. Have a great one. Bye-bye.